Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Hello there.
Hello, and Josh Brown.
Hiya, guys.
Chaps, it's a Friday, and it's also been one hell of a week. There's a whole bunch of news items dropping left, right, and center, from Cyberpunk 2077's new details to the PS5 menu interface stuff being shown off, and even GTA 6 potentially having a leaked map. So we took to Twitter and asked for your various questions, and we just thought we'd delve into everything. Of all the things I've just mentioned, hardly any of the questions have got anything to do with Cyberpunk and GTA, but not to worry, there's plenty of other things. First one from Mr. Dale Brown, who says, what are your honest thoughts regarding Sony being so secretive regarding hands-on impressions with the PS5 versus Xbox being so open for weeks now? Do you think that Sony are Sony waiting too long to get the console previews out? Benway, what's your initial take?
I reckon it's got a lot to do with the global bastard that is ruining the world, and probably they're just being weirdly secretive this time. Like last time, they weird. Wasn't. New gen cycle around, everyone had already been touching it. Like people had controllers in the wild and stuff like that. That's probably down to like Adam Boy's leaking things, but things were out there. We knew there's a weird aura, and I just literally think it's probably the UI has only really just come together in the past few weeks, and the production of the consoles, I reckon they were so unsure about things like that, and until like the last week, it feels.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, Josh, you remember when we started covering it earlier? I think it was earlier this year. It might have been last year. Time doesn't exist anymore. But we did a whole story on how there was rumors that Sony had like a factory shortage on various parts and stuff, and then that was kind of unfounded. Sony were like there was a whole report about them having some sort of shortage, and then Sony were like, no, it's totally fine. Don't worry about it. But it has taken until what is now 3-4 weeks before launch to even see what the menus look like, and we still don't know what the PlayStation Store looks like either.
Yeah, it's like, it's a strange rollout, but I do think part of it is intentional. I'm sure, no doubt, some of it was impacted by the ongoing global bastard. But at the same time, like, that's not... I'm giving What Culture Wrestling the full credit for that. That is not Josh Brown original. But yeah, when it comes to like the marketing of the machine, I actually think it's been quite smart, because we have been ravenous for every piece of hype. We might not have enjoyed it that much, but every single every single news drop has felt like an event, you know, whether it was the actual game reveals themselves, whether it was the price, whether it was the console, whether it was the goddamn UI, it's all felt impactful and big, whereas Microsoft has been far more open. And again, you could argue as a consumer, that's much better. But for building hype, I think being a bit secretive, holding off until a few weeks before, and then kind of having these drops kind of creates that energy, the sense of drive that you need to get this machine. This is why it's coming out. You know what I mean? Like, I think you can just look at the fact that it has sold out everywhere to kind of point you towards the fact that they probably didn't need to show off anything earlier than they have, because everything's sold out anyway. It's going to sell. And now that we're in the kind of final month, we're starting to see, you know, the system more substantially. And I just kind of think they're very different opposing ways to sell a next-gen console and to market a next-gen console. But I don't necessarily think one is better than the other. They're just like so many of the different features of this next-gen, Sony and Microsoft are just doing their own things this time around. They're not even, it doesn't feel like they're even directly competing. The only time I feel like they are directly competing is when they have those snide Twitter back and forth.
I love them.
Give me, you know, like when we did like the teardown, and I think it was like the guy was taking off the little what would you even call it? The little stand thing.
Yeah,
and then Xbox tweeted, "Well, all we have to do to change the way it's positioned, you just take
put
it
on its side."
There was another one of them yesterday as well. Was it the UI? After the UI video came out, they just put a JPEG up on Twitter and go, "Here's the UI."
See, I think that's them trying to sort of do what, like you mentioned Adam Boyes before, like that whole sort of like viral video from 2013, the whole how you trade games on PS4 thing, which arguably buried them completely overnight. It's almost like they're trying to sort of get back that sort of thing or get some ground back. I don't feel like those things have got over as well as they did when this, on the Sony side. But I don't know. I think that I'm fascinated by all the sort of ramifications of just how much this year has had like an impact on, you know, like the literal manufacturing, the factory, the shipping side of it and everything like that. But yeah, I mean, I guess just they seem to be bringing it together. It's either an incredibly careful marketing plan where all of these videos hit and the engagement is sky high, or they're scrambling to put it together as they slowly fall towards the earth. I have to assume that it's the former. We also have another question from Mr. Dale Brown, who says he's heard mixed messages and concerns over the liquid metal inside the PS5. And he knows a bunch of people who have decided to cancel their pre-orders due to concerns of its long-term viability. I will be getting both systems on launch day, but would love your thoughts. This thing is fascinating because for me, I went all like, ooh, new stuff when they said they were going to do the liquid metal cooling thing. And I have done a bit of, Googling on this before we started recording. Apparently, like, you know, liquid cooling is obviously something that's used a lot in PC circles. It tends to be like thought of as a high-end thing. It's like a niche thing. But there is a very, very real, you know, sort of potential repercussion that the liquid center thing can break, and especially when you're shipping that many systems like globally, and it's such a high specification to get it right, there is a chance that it could all go sideways. So I wouldn't be canceling pre-orders over it. I'd have to hope that Sony have got it locked down, and they've made a big point of it in the teardown video, saying like, look, we figured this stuff out. But what do you guys think of all the liquid cooling stuff? Does it freak you out?
Skynet, isn't it? Skynet's here, and they're slowly sneaking.
The T2 is living inside your PS5.
No, it's T1000. They're sneaking the T1000 to every household, and then we're all going to die. But no, you just got to think of it like the 360 Red Ring of Death, that you're not going to lose all that money. If it's a fault at the system level, they're going to honor the whole, like, send it in. Because even the PS3 had the yellow light of death, and I think Sony honored that. So even if it was to break in another catastrophic thing, I don't think they could survive that sort of thing like Microsoft could. I think you'll be fine financially. I think they'll just sort you out.
You'd have to imagine that, you'd have to imagine they're Sony, it's the PlayStation 5, they've had a long time to put it together, that it would be some sort of safe way to do it. I like the idea, I mean, because there's been a lot of hands-on reports about how cool the PS5 is literally, and sorry, how cool it is, how quiet it is. I mean, I guess it's cool too. But in terms of, you know, you minimize the heat, you don't need to rely on the fans. It means the whole system runs extremely quietly. And that a lot of that is down to like this three-prong cooling system they've got, like the liquid metal thing. They do have some fans, and they have a whole heat sink thing built into it as well. It seems like they've kind of prioritized like cooling systems, which is what you want. Even though the system is the size of a TV itself, like it seems like it is this massive thing. Josh, what's your thoughts on the T1000?
Well, I'm not like going to sit here and pretend I know everything about the properties of liquid metal outside of Terminator 2, but I have also been doing like some reading and some, I was watching the Digital Foundry video about the PlayStation breakdown the other day, see what they said about it, because it is like this new thing essentially. And I know a lot of people are worried that it's going to essentially result in, you know, their PlayStations having to be returned or having to be, you know, swapped out for something else. And I do think obviously that's valid, you know, like the longevity of this part, you know, might have issues in the future, but we've always had that, and it's not an excuse, but it feels like a lot of these parts are kind of like going to have issues the longer you use them and the more use you get out of them. And like, that's not awesome, but it seems like Sony's kind of chosen this for a reason. They're obviously going to be aware of the potential drawbacks of it, and they've still gone with it because hopefully that's the best solution that they had to like this issue. And I feel like, you know, I'm gonna have to just kind of trust them, because it might not work, but it also might, and they've done it for a reason. And kind of like, they've been like, I think the Digital Foundry guy said, you know, like they've been in this business so long now that I don't think they would do something that monumentally cocks up a system or absolutely ruins its lifespan, because, you know, they're not really in that business. They want to sell the machines, they want to cultivate a good community, they don't want to have to encounter a sort of Red Ring of Death style situation. And hopefully the liquid metal kind of gives us all of the perks that that part kind of like contributes to the system, hopefully without that drawback becoming a major thing. Because even if you look at now, like the thermal paste on the PlayStation 4s, like that thing like wears away like quite quickly. You have to replace it. I do not have the tech know-how to go into my PlayStation 4 Pro and do that. So I've just kind of been living with this loud ass machine for a long time, even after I've taken the dust out of it. So it's like all of these parts, they're all in some ways going to have issues eventually. It's just how much of an impact will that have? We don't know currently. I don't know. I wouldn't personally have cancelled my pre-order over finding this out. Maybe no. It's because I am entirely uninformed and I don't know the severity of the situation. But from what I've read up on, it feels like it could potentially be an issue, but not like something that's going to make me regret investing in the machine, especially this early on.
I get that it can go either way, but I think the vast majority is going to go positively. Like, it seems like it is this incredible solution to cooling. It's been used in PC circles for a long time. I did have a bit of Google for the specific components of this, and there was something called gallium that apparently is incredibly toxic if it mixes with water. So it's always like potential doomsday scenarios for how your PS5 could kill everybody that you love about.
But what was on the teardown video? Wasn't there like a little disclaimer at the bottom, like, if you open your PlayStation 5 console, beware of radiation?
You will die. Yeah, there's a thing that says in the disclaimer, it says that you'll get this laser radiation, there's like potential for laser radiation. So yeah, just full on, like Ben Roy said, full on Terminator, you know, T2's coming for you, or T1000's coming for you. Next question from Ethan, who says, do you think Red Dead Redemption 2 will get the GTA 5 next gen port treatment? Which I guess, you know, refers to obviously GTA 5 was released on PS4 the year after it came out on PS3 or the past gen consoles. Do you think they'll redo Red Dead 2? I don't, because the game looks so stunning anyway. I don't really see them putting the time into that, but you never know.
Yes, they will put out they will put it out on PS5, and they will sell it for $50 or $60 or pounds, or maybe even 70. And Rockstar will sell millions of copies, and that's how it probably will go, and it'll look a little bit nicer, but all in all, probably be a bit pointless.
I guess, to be honest, I was thinking, I don't think they'll go back to it and up-res it the same way they did with GTA 5. Like, GTA 5 on PS4 had, like, you know, traffic density was different and it was upgraded. If they port it, then fine, but I don't think they're going to change it.
I mean, it probably look a bit better. They can probably just switch the sliders, but I mean, you don't want to do traffic density in this because it's meant to be like the open west, isn't it? Really, in that case, I don't think there'll only be anything in the game, but I think it will look better, and I think they probably will cash in Money in the Bank and put some more out there.
All the wrestling references. Lads.
What? I have been having wet dreams about this idea for a good few months now. I absolutely want Red Dead Redemption 2 remastered for PlayStation 5 or Xbox or whatever looks best, because that game is excellent and I would absolutely pay top money for it. I might be going against all of my morals and everything I've said previously about remasters and, you know, smart delivery and stuff. But for this one game, I would make a terrible ethical exception and just buy the crap out of it. I don't know if they will, because I think GTA was a special occasion, not just because it's GTA, but because it came out right at the very tail end of the last generation. You know what I mean? It came out just before the next-gen machines. So a next-gen kind of edition was, in a lot of ways, essential to have the longevity for GTA Online, especially because, you know, that expanded what it could do and how many players were coming in and stuff. And they might do it with Red Dead Redemption, because obviously that's their second biggest franchise at the moment. It's just had like the PC port and stuff, and I feel like if they're bringing back GTA Online for PlayStation 5, you know, two generations after it launched or whatever, why not, you know, like, just do it. If they bundle in the long rumored Red Dead Redemption 1 remaster into the second one,
god,
like,
if that thing's
that
real,
that would be a good double.
It's true. Spoilers, I guess, for about 2 seconds. They've made Red Dead Redemption 1 and 2 anyway, so it's already feasible. It's pretty much all there, right? So, like, it's just asking to be done.
Yeah, that was always the foundation of that sort of rumor leak thing, is that in Red Dead 2, eventually you can venture back to Red Dead 1's map, so they do have those assets there.
I tell you what, I'll take it if they give me another Undead Nightmare style thing, because give me some more zombies in the West.
Big zombs. I guess I'm curious about it. For me, Red Dead 2 feels so complete. It feels like this labor of love that took so long to come out. And with Dan Houser leaving and things like that, I feel like you would get a port. You wouldn't get like the, you know, them retouching stuff up and things like that. But you never know. Next question from Coach Marv. As developers look to maximize fan retention, do you think we'll see a rise in the number of titles that are released episodically? A higher initial purchase price, which acts as a subscription into a game that promises monthly / regular updates? I think that overall, like, that's an interesting question. I think it's also worth picking apart that this generation, so many top tier devs have tried to find ways to monetize games over time. Like, there was that whole Kotaku report, I think it was in 2014, that like 90% of people don't finish their games. You know, and you've seen so many devs go down the games as a service route, or just find a set of goals that you can repeat day in, day out, have different goals that, you know, reset and things like that, loot systems and whatever. Yeah, what do you guys think of that? That another way to change monetization would be to sort of embrace the episodic side of it?
It depends game by game, really, and I don't, for the most part, I don't think it works. We saw the success of it in Hitman, because I think they were basically, they hadn't finished the game and they were trying to fix things, and they rejected all the pre-orders for that initial edition and everything like that, which was kind of unprecedented, where they're just like, nah, don't worry, have all your money back, sort of thing. But and then they went back on it with the WB publishing, so maybe they'll, like, and they're not going to do that again with Hitman 3. So if they're not doing it, and they're the ones that arguably, apart from Telltale and like their heyday, did it the best, I don't think anyone should really dabble with it unless we ever get a Half-Life 3, and then I will accept it, and then I will give it the Gabe Newell seal of approval. But apart from that, nah.
I mean, I'm curious, like something like Last of Us 2, where it's like the story comes out now and they actually, you know, throughout development, they delayed the multiplayer. We'll put it out separately. Same with Cyberpunk. Like, there's a way to sort of episodically do it, even if those episodes are massive separate games.
If it's multiplayer, then yeah, sure. But not if it's the actual story. Like, if it was, you give me Last of Us, the first half of the game, and I've got to wait a year for the second half, I would be pulling my eyes out. Like, where is it? Why am I waiting, sort of thing? But like with GTA, when the multiplayer came out, it was like a couple of weeks later. Like, that's totally fine. Like, do what you need to do to get the job done at the end of the day, but don't, I can't really vouch this.
No, I'm not necessarily in support of it. I think that idea of, you know, like on the money grubby publisher side, because obviously microtransactions haven't panned out at the minute. They're sort of exploring them down the cosmetic side. But if you take a full, you know, you take a full game that would be sold for now £70 or $70 or whatever, and split that, could a publisher force those, like, you know, dividers in there to be like, actually, we'll sell you it in chunks just so they can maximize revenue that way?
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I just don't see it in that extent, especially not in the classical episodic sense. Like Ben Roy said, you know, I feel like we've had publishers trying to do that about 5 years ago, Square Enix especially, and then kind of not getting away with it and not making as much money as they wanted. I'm sure we'll get games that are more segmented and we have pieces of them kind of like sold off or monetized in a different way. You know, there were all those rumors about Halo Infinite's like multiplayer being free to play and coming out either before or after the campaign.
Remember Halo Infinite,
boys? I can't remember
is
that.
It's actually called Halo Craig Edition.
Come on. Craig Mason.
Yes. But I feel like, yeah, we will sort of see that, and we're kind of almost seeing the pivot to that now with the likes of, you know, Call of Duty Warzone being an entirely separate thing from the mainline Call of Duty, and that will live beyond Modern Warfare and into the next CODs and kind of act as this support and complementary addition to other releases, you know what I mean? Another service. But I can't imagine us going to a place where it's like, right, you can pay £30 for the campaign, you can pay £30 for the multiplayer, you can pay something else for like this add-on and kind of make them episodic that way. That kind of seems a bit antiquated, especially when in this day and age, I feel like publishers are all about getting us in, you know, getting us into a unified experience and then milking us dry in there through microtransactions and stuff, because they do make a lot of money through microtransactions, even if they have had to transform them and misshape them from loot boxes to cosmetics or whatever. And I think that kind of unification idea is in one sense good for the player because it means we get occasionally some free-to-play experiences and stuff, or we get entry to a certain part of a game. But also, that could become a bit worrisome where you might have to, you know, pay $5 to unlock this mode or pay whatever to unlock something else. I can see games...
I think they'll find a way.
...segmented like that. They will find a way. They always find a way to monetize everything, man.
Mm-hmm. Next question down from Luke Cullen, who says, is there anything at all in terms of the essence of the gaming industry, whether it's innovation from game studios or player engagement, etc., that you feel is being lost over the years as we transition from one console generation to the next? Now, I think this is a really interesting question because my mind after that went to the lack of innovation in the AAA space, especially this generation. I feel like we've just seen so many big devs double down on stuff that we know works, bankable mechanics that you can repeat over and over again, hence the Ubisoft formula or things like that. And even something like Cyberpunk, for me, one of my biggest bugbears is that it just looks like a bunch of mechanics we've already done 100 times, but done better than ever, or at least polished more than ever. So for me, it would be the lack of innovation in the AAA space, in the top tier space, which if you compare to the 2000s, every other big game had brand new mechanics, brand new ways to play it, brand new ways to interact with, you know, game mechanics and spaces and environments and things like that. What comes to mind for you guys, or would you just disagree with it, that it's like we're not losing anything, it's all forward momentum?
Oh, it's a really good question, but also a really difficult one, isn't it? Because I do think in terms of exactly what you said, not to just parrot it, like the idea that we're just using a familiar set of game mechanics and a familiar set of formulas over and over again, and we're looking for the games that do that the best. I feel like that has come to a head over this past generation, especially where, you know, the laser focus on these games, which cost so much money and take so much time, they're focus tested to death. They all have the same set of crafting mechanics and semi-open world sort of
like the Sony formula. Yeah.
Yeah. In like, they've made some really great games. Some of the best PlayStation exclusives, some of the best third-party games have been under that formula. But also, like, I feel like, you know, so many developers now that we used to associate with kind of variety and innovation. You know, we were just talking about Rockstar. Like, Rockstar are great. They made some of my favorite games ever, especially this generation. But they've had, like, two games this generation, you know what I mean? And they were great, but where's one, Bully? Really? Where's Mad Max? Where's Table Tennis? You know what I mean? All of these cool experimental ideas.
Do you mean Max Payne,
IP.
Mate? Do you mean a bit of Max Payne?
Oh, sorry, yeah, Max Payne, not Mad Max.
Oh, you mean, but you also, care about Mad Max, I know.
Where's Mad Max as well? That's another game that I just couldn't imagine getting made now. Like, even that mistake was bringing up a game that, you know, someone would have taken a risk on 5 years ago, but no one would be making a Mad Max 2 it's weird.
Yeah, for me, that's why I'm so fascinated by the indie space. Like, I feel like indie games are the ones doing the experimental game mechanics. It's so rare that you get it in a top tier space. And I know that's because they need to make their money back and the gamble is bigger, etc. But something like the Mad Max thing, like the handful of licensed games that we've got this gen, like it was The Mummy Demastered, it was the Mad Max game from Avalanche. Like, it was very few titles that sort of, like John Wick is made by Bethel, like he was the dude that did, you know, Volume and Thomas Was Alone. Like, it's just, it's a strange time with that. Ben, what do you think of the overall conundrum?
I have nothing unique to add to it. So I'm going to go with the whole, I'm going to piggyback on Josh, who's piggybacked on you, and say the whole sort of thing of the, it seems all or nothing now, right? It seems either you take the Ubisoft Game One formula, or you take the Sony sort of like Jim Ryan formula over here, or you throw it on Game Pass and that's really it. I don't feel like you get anything like, I've been watching a couple of like retrospectives recently on like Dead Space and things like that, and you just don't get a surprise banger of that sort of budget.
That was EA as well.
Like, yeah, that was EA doing it, like when they had their little renaissance like from 2008 and whenever Dead Space 2 came out, which is bloody effing amazing. And like when you had other creative things, like you had people like Alice go out there and create such games like, you know, the Kane and Lynch series that they came out, and they were just like, you know, different things like that, what we had throughout the last generation. Singularity, I'm going to keep banging
Singularity, drums. Raven Software, that's such a shout. Raven used to be such a dependable,
hopefully,
varied dev.
Hopefully
that's
come back out of Call of Duty hell. They've come out of the map making hell, and they're making the campaign. Hopefully they can climb out of that. And then who knows? Like, let's spread the Star Wars license out around a bit and give them another shot, because they made some great Star Wars games.
Star Wars is such a worthwhile thing. If you want to drill down the problem with this generation to, in terms of innovation per dev, it's literally the Raven problem. It's you take a dev that were, you know, game by game, like the X-Men Origins Wolverine game was brilliant. Even though it doesn't sound great, that thing was brilliant. Singularity was brilliant. And then they just got completely hoovered up to churn out Call of Duty content forevermore.
Yeah.
Aye, that's exactly what I was going to say. You've got all of these great studios who used to create their own games, and yeah, they might not have been 10 out of 10 AAA blockbuster experiences, but that doesn't mean that they were worthless. Like Ben Roy said, it's not an all or nothing kind of gamble, you know what I mean? We should have this space where these talented people and these talented studios get to create their own game once in a while. Because I mean, I love Vicarious Visions. I think they're doing some excellent work, and it's great to see them make their own titles again. But even they're like making remasters and continuations of other franchises that are bankable, you know what I mean? And they're the exception. And it sucks to see them get swept up into the big franchise machine. You know, Dead Space, like you mentioned there, Ben Roy, like Visceral Games were awesome. Then they got pushed off Dead Space, and then they were making Battlefield Hardline. And it's like, how has this been allowed to happen? This is exactly what's kind of been wrong with the entire like past.
And then they were canned anyway.
Half, I guess. And then they were killed anyway, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were set like, up like, oh, hey, it's like, oh, hey, could you make sure this sells X amount of units? Like, it's impossible. They just totally sort of like got corporate sort of like backstabbed into like destruction. Like, I mean, maybe do what, is it Sonny Bend that made Days Gone?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I'm not, this is like, the studios, when they're based in somewhere like a big city like San Francisco or London or anything like that, that it's going to be hard. You've got to make a certain amount of bank back. But I think one of the reasons, like other people have said this as well, why Days Gone basically took 7 million years to make and they could survive is because they're in the middle of the woods and the rent there is cheap. So like, imagine like if we get, I think this is again with like more studios sort of building up or even do what Biffle Games is doing, like doing around sort of like work from home at the moment sort of thing. Like, maybe like if we diversify for where studios are based a bit more, and then they can take more time to get these sort of like what is to them like a AAA sort of thing, but more like what the mainstream sees like a AA in that sort
yes,
of sense. Like,
the whole AA concept. For me, I don't think Last of Us, Red Dead, Cyberpunk, Final Fantasy VII, in terms of, I've said this loads before, but I don't think they're the bar to be aimed for. I think they're the absolute maximum end of a given spectrum.
We should get like three or four of them a generation, maybe like five at a stretch sort of thing, but right. like...
Which and we do kind of, yeah. But I mean, that when Sean Layden left Sony and he was like, I would love to see a reduction in overall production cost, budget cost, to be able to let devs like Naughty Dog, Rockstar, whoever, make more games overall. For me, that's what I would be all for. And if the sacrifice is, you know, 4K detailed backgrounds or whatever, then just make that change. Like the important thing is the game mechanics, not the visuals. But that's a whole other separate conversation. But yeah, for me, it would be, you know, amending that stuff to allow those devs to do more so that they don't go for the biggest thing over and over again. I think that we've proven that formula has fundamental problems in regards to how AAA games work.
Star Wars Squadrons was kind of that as well, but it does feel like it's sort of like, get it out.
But they didn't market it at all. Yeah, like that would have been such a great way to market something on the side.
It just feels like I would like a middle sort of like smaller. It doesn't have to be like shorter, but just like say, I don't mind if you reuse the same corridor or if I'm going down the same thing. Like I'm sure there's a lot of in Dead Space 1 that was like sort of reused and like sort of like tricks and things that they did to sort of like, you know, and so I guess, well, when you go down somewhere, you're not shooting, you know, you're always going to come back there shooting because they can't just build all this stuff just to like go have a little chat down and either like hold your thing on the headset like Marcus Phoenix were doing and one and done sort of thing. I think, just sort of like middle ground games, but then it's also hard to market to the masses because then you can't go, it's the biggest thing ever.
See that, but that they don't need to do the biggest dice roll ever. It's greedy corporate higher ups just admitting to themselves that they don't need the biggest take every single time. Hence the Avengers falling on its face. And also Hellblade, Ninja Theory proved that you can do a AAA looking game on an indie budget. Like, you know, there's ways for all that stuff to get balanced out. But for me, it would be like reducing the production costs overall, or reducing the scope of a certain title based on the idea being that you get more titles out over time. Anyway, thank you very much for the question. I forget who that was from, but thank you very much. I did read your name at the beginning. Yes, but I don't think it was Mr. Luke. Next one from David Cormelo, who says, do you think Xbox should have come up with a new UI for Series S/X, or is it for the best that it shares the UI with Xbox One? For me, total subjectiveness, I like a new UI, I like a new system, I like it to look like a new system. Although they have sort of, the Xbox Series X is like a revamped version of the current one. It's not as drastic an overhaul as the PS5's UI. What do you guys think of the visuals of the Series S/X so far?
I'm
getting those tiles. Sorry, Ben Roy. The Windows tiles, man, like, they make me feel sick every single time. I'm like, why is this design good? Every single time I boot up my Xbox One, and I know the Xbox One X is slightly different. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why have you done this? I get what they're going for. They're going for this unification thing across all of the Xbox family. And I'm sure it's, like you said, it's entirely subjective. If you like that style, that might be awesome. You know what I mean? You've got everything that looks the same. You know exactly what you do. It's very functional. But for me, I look at it and I feel cold. I think I've talked about this in a podcast before. I boot it up and I feel upset. I don't feel welcomed in. When I boot up the PlayStation, I see my lovely blue theme that I've never changed in 7 years. And
sorry, hold on. Jingle. Sorry.
No, I hate it.
Oh, just you and this theme. Ben Roy, mate, did you know that Josh hasn't changed his theme in 7 years?
I've heard this. Also, you know what? I have a friend that has done the same, but his is red. So I can't understand.
No. Anyway, it's carry on.
Did you not get the free one from The Hobbit, the third Hobbit movie? Get a bit of Gandalf on the back of your screen.
Yeah. And Gandalf, he's too sad for me. Like, he's too grey. He's got something shifty going on behind those eyes.
You were in the middle of the point there, but I couldn't let that stand. I had to get that aired out again.
I was more or less finished. I was just saying, like, if you like the Xbox UI, I don't think it's a big deal that they haven't really changed it much, because that's what they're going for. They're going for that unification thing. But as someone who really rallies against it for whatever reason, it hits me on a primal level. And I don't really understand why I don't like it. I just don't find it very cozy or comforting. It's actually weirdly puts me off Xbox as a brand. And I don't know why. It's a weird psychological thing.
I totally get that. I'm just someone who, this is going to be like, ugh. But I don't hate, but I just don't like using Windows PCs. Like, I don't like, whenever I use them, I think it comes from like working on them for so much over the years, and they're always dry and then I go and use a lovely Mac and it just looks like pretty and nice and I can just do what I want, but I can't play games on it and I can't do other things. Yeah, I know you can't do certain things, like, oh, you can't change certain things on an iPhone. I don't care. It looks fine. And I like how it is. But with an Xbox, they put that thing through a blender so many times that, like, at one point you started up an Xbox, I'm sure at one point in our lives, and the first thing the icon was on was an ad, for example, like in the Dom Prime days. But like, where it is with like PlayStation, like, I think it's just reached the pinnacle of, like, I just don't need anything. Like, I do obviously need stuff new because we always need to move on and like progress. But with that, with what we got on the PlayStation 4 and similar to the PlayStation 3, PlayStation 3 ran like poo, but like the PlayStation 4 it's just fine. It's great. Like, it's just simple. It's clean. You can have your certain amount of games. You can have every game on your machine. And if you've got a drive on me, it's like just scrolling forever, trying to find what you need. But I think it's so much clean and simple. And when you look at the Microsoft and how they've done their tiles and things over the years, and it just seems like they're just like, oh, let's just like hammer this on there. Let's put that on there sort of thing. Oh God, let's fix this. Oh no, sort of thing. And yeah, it makes me want to throw up sometimes.
I think they've, like, someone in their design wheelhouse, especially on the phone side of things, was clearly the one who pioneered the tile thing. And I feel like they've just been completely dedicated to it in the face of what feels like the rest of the company going, for the love of God, can you change this? Because they run with it and everything, and it always looks pretty naff. We got a ton more questions, which we will do. We'll do a follow-up Q&A pod, because there's lots of stuff that came in. So thank you all very much for submitting stuff. I did want to end on the question from Hail the Bale, which is a great name. And this will be very quick. You guys to go with your gut responses. What is the greatest game for PlayStation 4, Ben Roy?
Death Stranding. Death Stranding.
Interesting take, Mr. Josh Brown. What is the greatest game for PlayStation 4?
People aren't going to like this, but it's The Last of Us Part 2, I think.
That's fine. I thought you were going to say something crazy, like, oh, it's Gravity Rush 2, because, like, it's go down that route. I'm going to go God of War. I think the 2018's God of War is the best game for PlayStation 4.
I love Last of Us Part 2 as well, but Death Stranding just
what your gut said, is it?
Ben Roy. I also love Death Stranding. It's probably number two. We can join forces.
Let's defeat Scott. Of those three things, we'll do some sort of best PlayStation 4 games of the generation. Obviously, it'll probably be a list, but we'll do a podcast follow-up as well for the sake of more banter like this, where I have to fight both of you off because God of War is clearly number one. So whatever. But anyway, for now, as my voice disappears, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Something Kojima related that I was going to say.
Fantastic. And also Josh Brown.
Goodbye, and I'm sorry.
You should be, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye. We'll be right back.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.